D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Elliott Friedman, Sportsnet's NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliott, the great chase is on. Alex Ovechkin, 3 goals from becoming the NHL's all-time leading goal scorer, breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. I had the privilege of covering Alex Ovechkin's career when I first started out in this business. And there was a period of time, Elliott, and I know you remember this as well, where Ovechkin seemed to be slowing down. Now, slowing down to Ovechkin is scoring 35, 40 goals instead of scoring 50 goals or 60 goals. But what he's been able to do in his career at this stage of his career, to get to the precipice of history near the end of this season, is astounding. What has impressed you most about Ovechkin this season, particularly as we step on the doorstep of history?
Well, the fact that he's even right here right now, Adam, like I think when he got hurt, I don't think anybody believed that this was going to happen this season. And not only does it look like it's going to happen this season, but it doesn't even look like it's going to come down right down the wire. It's interesting. We talked on the pod this week about MVP candidates, and someone sent me a note and said, how can Ovechkin not be considered an MVP candidate this year? The pace he's scoring at and the fact the Capitals are the number two team in the league. And I the more I thought about it, the more I kind of agreed. But I just think the fact that he's here this year, like if you go back to last season, Adam, there was a point where I think people wondered if this was ever going to happen, that maybe he slowed down, as you said, and you know maybe Gretzky was safe after all. I think a couple of things changed. Obviously, he's had an enormous year, but I do think the fact the Capitals have been a good team has really energized him. Last year, they made the playoffs. They got wiped out in the first round, but they had a real awful start to the year. They looked terrible. And I think there was a point last year where it looked like they were more of a threat to finish last than make the playoffs. But I think the winning has energized him. I think obviously he's energized too. And I think it's incredible that we're even talking about this now after the broken leg. I didn't think there was any way we were going to see this after the broken leg.
And we're at the point now where Gary Bettman is basically traveling with the Capitals and Wayne Gretzky too, if I'm not mistaken. Not actually with the Capitals, but
he's
following along.
I think Gretzky's going to join. I wouldn't be surprised if he's there tomorrow night because, you know, the other thing you look at here, Adam, is the Capitals' schedule. They're kind of home, road, home, road. Like they're home tomorrow night and then they go on the road Sunday against the Islanders, a team he scored on a ton. Now, I remember asking them a few weeks ago, if Ovechkin gets close, are you going to sit him? And they said, we wouldn't do that, and I don't think he even let us do it anyway. But you know that there's, like, it's Chicago tomorrow night. They're a young team. They're not really that great. They don't defend great. You got to think that home fan base, yeah, I was joking today. I was doing a hit in Winnipeg, and I was like, he might play 45 minutes tomorrow night. So you can tell that they're going to do everything they can to try to get this done at home, I have a feeling.
Elliott, a lot of Predators fans are paying attention to the upcoming draft lottery. The Predators eliminated from postseason contention. Predators fans hope that this terrible season leads to them being able to draft a game-changing player. There are two forwards at the top of this draft, James Hagans and Michael Mesa. Now, I know that your expertise is not necessarily focusing on the prospects, but you do talk to a lot of people around the league, a lot of people who study these prospects. When you talk to people about James Hagans and Michael Mesa, what do you hear from people in the know?
Well, I would actually say to you that there are people, like our draft guys, we've got two guys, Sam Cosentino and Jason Bukla, who do our draft. And they say they actually add a third forward to that, Porter Martone. Now, James Hagans plays at Boston College, and Michael Misa, he plays in the Ontario Hockey League at Saginaw. And Porter Martone also plays in the Ontario Hockey League in Brampton. And they believe that those three forwards, along with the one defenseman who's at the top of the draft, his name is Matthew Schaefer, are sort of like the top four. So I would say to Predators fans, in addition to the two players that Adam just mentioned, Higgins and Misa, you should familiarize yourself with Martone too, because a lot of people put him up in the same class. I think Higgins is the guy who was getting a lot of the attention because I think for a while he was kind of seen as a potential number one pick and a little bit ahead of some of those other guys. He's tremendously skilled, tremendously skilled. And I think the fact that the other two names have caught up to him or are in the same breath of him is not necessarily because of anything bad that Higgins has done, but just because of how much that those two other guys have surged. You know, the one thing about Michael Misa is a few years ago in Ontario and Canada, they started something called exceptional status. They allowed kids to start, like, for a time, if you were kind of like 16 years old or younger or right around that cutoff, I don't remember the exact age, you weren't allowed to play junior hockey in one of the big leagues, Ontario, Quebec, or the West. And they said, sorry, you have to be a certain age. Well, it got to a point where for some of the best players at that age, they were threatening to go play in other leagues. And these junior leagues, they made a business decision to say, okay, we're going to create exceptional status. And it started with John Tavares. I think he was the first one. Like, he was such a good player at such a young age that they said, okay, we're going to create a window where players on your level are going to be able to get in. And they don't do it every year. There's only been, I think there's less than 10 players who've gotten it. It's around that number. And again, if I'm a little bit off, please forgive me. But Michael Misa is one of the players who got that exceptional status.
And some of the other ones, by the way, Connor Bedard was given exceptional status. Connor McDavid was given exceptional status, just for context.
Yeah, so thank you, Adam, for helping bail me out on this.
No problem.
But Michael Misa was one of the players who was given exceptional status a couple years ago. And at the beginning, it was a bit of an adjustment. He's a young guy. It happens. But over the last year and a half, you've really started to see the ability. And, you know, Michael Misa wasn't – there were a number of shocking decisions this year for the Canadian team at the World Juniors. Michael Misa was one of them. He wasn't put on the team, and they lost early. And that was a big flashpoint the moment it happened. People are like, Canada's going to regret this, and they did. And he wasn't the only one, but he was one of the biggest ones. And nothing that he has done since that tournament has convinced anyone that it was the right decision to leave him off the team. So he's a really, really talented young guy. And Martone is the other one I'd watch too. He's in that group. So it's those three guys you're going to be looking at if Nashville gets a top four pick. And I know right now that you guys are in the number three position.
Number three position. And so the way the lottery works, and I've been trying to study up on the details of this, Elliot, and it's been rare that the Predators have been in this, because I think they've only picked in the top five twice. By my recollection, Seth Jones was fourth overall in 2013, and then the very, very first year that they were in the league,
David Legwand,
they
right?
lost the lottery and they picked second. Actually, they moved up, if I remember, to get to second. They traded up to get to David Legwand as the second pick. They haven't had a top five pick other than that. But if you're third, and it looks very likely that they will end up in that 30th overall spot, which means they could move up to one. And they couldn't fall lower than five, correct?
Yeah, so they changed the rules a couple years ago. They changed the rules a couple years ago because they didn't like the way they were becoming so random. Like, the team that really hated it was Detroit, because they had a number of bad years in a row. and they kept on getting hosed. So they kind of changed the they weren't the only one who was upset, but Detroit was one of the ones that got hurt the most. So basically the way it works is a team cannot move up more than 10 points in the lottery, and only two picks are determined by the lottery, one and two. So that means you're right. You can't really have teams dropping like they used to. Like, there used to be some teams that really used to drop. You can't. So you have the drawing for one, then you have the drawing for two, and then everybody slots in after that. So the maximum you can drop is two spots. But if somebody who, for example, is 13th wins it, they can't go to number one because you can only go up to right. 10 spots.
You made some interesting comments about the forwards up there. I think what would be interesting is it does seem like everything that I've read from different sources is that Schaefer, the one defenseman, is the clear-cut number one. And that would be something – obviously the Predators need everything right now. That Barry Trotz has been just coveting a number one center for a long time. But it would be interesting if you were to win the lottery and the best player available by consensus is Schaefer – do you take the defenseman? Because I think you could argue that they need a defenseman, going forward just as much as the center, even though the center has been the more elusive thing to find in franchise history.
Well, Willie, I look at what's happening in front of you, and I see two very different things. It depends to me, like San Jose, Chicago, right? Like, if San Jose wins the lottery and goes first, and right now, they're as we sit here today, they're the last place team in the league. They're 2 points lower than Chicago. Like you can never have enough offense. I really do believe that. But you have Celebrini and you have Smith, right?
Right.
And you have Eklund. Like, I look at them on the blue line, and sometimes I think when you take need at the top of the draft, you can really walk yourself into trouble where you don't need to. But if you evaluate all guys equally, I could see San Jose saying, we need a defenseman more than we need a forward. And then you have Chicago, which is at 31st right now, so they have the second pick. Like, they got a lot of D. They got a lot of young D. Like, they took Lev Shunov last year, was the second overall pick, and they have other defensemen, including, some of the guys they're debuting right now, who are starting to see play, like Sam Renzel, one of the kids that just made his debut this week. I could see Chicago saying, we have young defensemen. We need some more young players who can play with Bedard. And so, like, does it mean they go that way? No, it doesn't, because, like I said, I do think sometimes if you draft for need, you can really make mistakes. But again, if all things are equal, I can see San Jose leaning defense and Chicago leaning forward. So depending on where it all ends up, I mean, the decisions could be made in front of you. You could say, let's just say it stays the same. I would be surprised if Schaefer got down to three, just because of the way everybody talks about him. But I could see you guys having a pick between two of Misa, Higgins, and Martone. I could definitely see that.
Yep. And I think Nashville would be excited for that. One other reference point, and Elliot, as you probably know, the Titans have the first overall pick, and we've had endless discussions about, is this a great year to have the first pick? How good are these prospects, especially at quarterback, compared to past years? And the quarterbacks that are at the top of those draft class. The same discussion happens every year in the NHL. For example, the Nashville draft a couple of summers ago that you were at has turned out to be exactly what it was hyped up to be, right? Very good. A lot of good prospects. In fact, Nashville just signed Matthew Wood. He's not going to play tonight, but he skated with the team for the first time today here in Dallas, so it's great to see him.
Not surprisingly, like, all this craziness is leading into all the immigration issues, I guess. They got to get that sorted out. So
yes, and that's not, it's not done yet.
Hopefully that will happen fast. Yeah.
They're hoping it happens sooner than later, but he's not going to be in the lineup tonight. But how would you rate this draft class? I'm hearing it's not as loaded as other years, and maybe next year looks a little bit better. But what are you hearing along those lines in general?
I think that's true, Willie. I think that in overall depth, next year is better than this year. I think that's true. I think there were some teams later in the first round who were more comfortable giving up draft picks this year as opposed to next year. So I would overall, Willie, agree with that. However, if you go into the top five, if you go into that top four, if you end up in that spot, you're going to be really happy with one of those players. Like I said, our two draft guys really like those four players. They like Schaefer, they like Misa, they like Higgins, and they like Martone. So they think if you're in the top four, you're slightly a cut above. Now, the interesting guy, and again, I don't follow these players as closely as our draft gurus do. I just don't have the time, so I want to be careful about how I say this. But
yeah,
there's a really interesting guy. Like, basically, if you go to NHL.com, they rank their scouting service, Central Scouting, ranks all the players, and they go by they sort of go by North American skater, international skater, North American goalie, and international goalie. And I stress on these that the one thing you have to be careful with is they don't do this with the benefit of any in-person interviews. They don't do that. They simply rank them as players, what they see. But it's always good to get an idea of what they're thinking of. The guy who's number five on their list right now is a player is a player by the name of McQueen, Roger McQueen. And, you know, for example, Don Sweeney, the Bruins GM, and it's really unbelievable when you think about it, that the Boston Bruins are in last place in the Eastern Conference. Like, even 2 months ago, who would have thought that this would have been even possible? But this player, Roger McQueen, who's ranked fifth, he plays in the Western Hockey League for Brandon. He's a really interesting guy in the sense that there are some teams are spending a lot of time looking at him right now. It's been a little up and down. There's been a split. There are some teams who think very highly of him. There are some teams who are uncertain. And again, this is not my expertise, so I'm always careful about this stuff. But whoever has the fifth pick, it's going to be a very interesting decision with him, because it sounds like there's a real split on where teams think his ceiling is. So it's top four, then a really interesting guy in McQueen, and then we'll see.
Elliot, real quick, we're a little short on time, but with what the Blues did, we just saw a lot of the Blues the last couple of weeks, and they're on fire. And they famously signed the two restricted free agents last year, and they both played great. Do you think there will be a lot more offer sheets this summer?
I think that there's noise about it, yes. It's always a question as to whether or not it's real or it's just noise. And, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting is there's going to be more cap room, Willie, because the cap is going up. So some teams say to me, everyone's just going to match. The one thing I'm curious about, Willie, is does a team say, okay, we're going to do a one-year poison pen where teams don't have cap room, and then we'll worry about extending that player later. That's the one I'm curious about, because some teams will have some cap room for that, and there will be teams who are vulnerable for that. And I'll say this. I had one GM telling me, seeing the success of those two players in St. Louis, he said to me, my owner's asked a bit about us doing that.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, joining us on D-Mace, Fingen, and Donick, presented by Old National Bank. Elliot, thank you so much for your time. As always, we'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
You as well. Elliot Freeman, always a pleasure. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, We're 2 days out from the Final Four, and I want us to all touch on something that's been a big talking point about this NCAA tournament. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.